From Quality Radio Productions, it's the Upstate Radio Theater. I'm Jake Longwell. We'll open this hour of Old Time Radio with an episode of Hollywood Theater, a syndicated series from the late 1940s, sponsored by Skippy Peanut Butter. This broadcast from October 10th of 1947, The Check.
The following program was produced in Hollywood and transcribed for release at this time. If you like peanuts, you'll like Skippy. From Hollywood, Skippy, America's largest selling peanut butter, presents the finest in comedy, romance, drama, in the Skippy Hollywood Theater. Presenting Leela Rogers in The Check. And now here is the director of the Skippy Hollywood Theater, Mr. Les Mitchell.
Thank you, Van Desitel. It's been a real privilege and pleasure to be associated with Leela Rogers during her presentation of deserving actors for whom she predicts stardom. In the past weeks, you have met her as charming hostess, coach, advisor, and enthusiastic booster of young people, and as a proud mother. Now, as we close our series, we're going to present Leela Rogers, the actress. But now here is Van Desitel, the man who, like our sponsor's product, not only is triple milled to a buttery smoothness, but stays fresh and sweet to the last adjective at the end of the commercial.
Now, Les, is that fair? Just because I sometimes casually mention that Skippy peanut butter is incredibly wonderful? Sure, maybe I do get carried away a little, but great goobers, who wouldn't? After all, Les, Skippy tastes exactly like plump, selected, freshly roasted peanuts. And show me the poet who wouldn't rip out a rhapsody and get his iambic pentameter all excited over that flavor. Go ahead. Call me a sentimental fool, just because I get all quivery when I tell people that Skippy peanut butter has no oil separation. Here, Les, let me spread a little Skippy for you on this cracker. Now, I'll eat it. Doesn't that taste fantastic? What a feast, what a treat, what freshness. But, Les, do you realize that Skippy stays fresh, sweet, and easily spread to the last spoonful at the bottom of the jar? No wonder I get all choked up inside. It's just like the poet said. From the Straits of Minnehaha to the shores of Mississippi, if you like peanuts, you'll like Skippy. And now here is our director, Les Mitchell.
And here is our star, Leela Rogers, who is an accomplished writer.
Les.
I'm trying to introduce you, Leela.
Well, Les, after all these weeks, I think the audience has heard just about all there is to tell. So let's just take the final plunge and get on with the play.
Well, I think it would take a great many more weeks to tell all of the talents of one Leela Rogers, but more about that after the play. Now, curtain going up. Places, everyone. Curtain. The curtain is up, and here's the play. The Skippy Hollywood Theater presents Leela Rogers in The Check. There is a riot of autumn color inside the Adams house. But the real riot is taking place inside the house where Midge and Margie Adams are packing to go away to college. And Molly Adams, their mother, is working on another story. Every fall, Molly shakes out her literary talents, much as other people take warm winter clothing out of mothballs. That none of these stories is ever finished matters not at all to Molly. 10 years ago, she wrote and finished a story, and for 10 years it has made its way into one magazine editorial room after another, a lonely representative of Molly's skill. When it is sold, there will be plenty of time to finish the others. Until then, there's no time like autumn for new beginnings, according to Molly.
On the chest of drawers in my room, and it isn't a kissing scene, it's a murder. Murders are so good these days. Oh, there's the postman, Midge. Would you see if he's left anything?
Sure. Was that the postman's whistle?
Yes, Margie. Midge is gone for the mail, if there is any. Goodness, dear, turn around here. Oh. Is that a tear in your skirt?
I tore it on that old trunk. Gosh, Mother, I hope sometime I can have some decent luggage. All the other girls have.
I know, dear. Really, I know. But with both of you in school at the same time, well, you know how it is.
Oh, sure, I know.
Nothing but a skimpy little letter for you, Mother.
Why, girls, this letter. It's from the magazine I sent my story to. Well, isn't it out? It's the thin.
Oh, open it, Mother. Open it. Maybe it's a check.
You mean maybe I...
Oh, Weepers, it does look like a check through there.
Oh, my goodness.
Here, let me open it. Oh. It's a check. You shouldn't care. My gosh, Mother, it is a check.
Tracy. Oh, her... Margie. Girls. Oh, dear. I feel a little faint. Girls, I sold my story.
Oh!
This is a check for $500. Well, Jim, there it is. There's the check after all these years. Oh, Jim, you'll never know how I feel about that check.
Oh, Molly, honey, I'm proud of you. I bet I'm just as pleased as you are, as a matter of fact. Think of it. Your name in a national magazine.
Oh, that. Well, that'll be nice, of course, but not half so nice as being paid honest-to-goodness money for just a story.
Now, listen, Molly, I want you to spend all that money on yourself, every bit of it. Spend it for things you've always wanted and never had.
And the things I'm going to buy, nice fluffy things for the girl, something special for you,
now,
Jim.
Now, listen. You have yourself a real buying fling, but don't spend a red cent on me. I won't hear of it.
You just let me handle the spending end, Jim. I expect I'll do very nicely with it.
Midge, you know how Mother is about money. She'll buy us things right and left before she ever gets around to finding out what we really want, and then there won't be any money left. So let's get together on this thing. You know the things I want, so kind of...
Sure, if you'll keep her from buying me that drippy blue velveteen dress she thinks is just my type. Mom's an angel, but she petrifies me when she gets her hands on a little money. I expect it's a good thing we've always been sort of poor.
Look, girls, I wouldn't for the world lay a restraining hand on your mother and her money, but you know how she is. Dollars or nickels, it all looks alike to Molly. Bless her. So, see to it she doesn't buy me a thing. She's made up her mind I need a radio coat or some such fool thing. See that she doesn't buy it. It or anything else for me, and try to see that she buys something for herself.
We'll certainly try, Daddy. But you realize I hope that we have very little influence with Mother where money's concerned. Daddy, come and see the wonderful luggage Mother got me to take back to school. Isn't it luscious? Monogrammed and everything. Smell that new leather.
Say, that's really something. Who'd ever think the homely cow could turn into a sleek object like that?
Come on, Popsy Wopsy, turn around and give me the eye. Glamour, eh, Popsy?
Why, Midget, can this be that 17-year-old we usually look for in the folds of a Sloppy Joe sweater?
Neat, aren't I? Oh, golly, I've wanted a coat like this for years and years. You've no idea how sophisticated it makes me feel. Daddy, if I'm a success at college, I'll owe it all to Mother's story.
You mean a success in rhetoric and botany, of course. Hey, Midge! Margie! Come out here. I want to show you something.
Okay.
What's up, Popsy?
All the new seat covers. Gee, Daddy, they look wonderful.
Oh, brother, blue plaid. Just what we always wanted.
Yes, I'd like to know how it happened. I went out to get in the car, and there they were. I thought gotten in the wrong bus some way. Tell me, what goes on?
Well, Mom was determined to buy you something. You know how she is. And, brother, what a struggle we had. Mom was for the radio coat, and Midge and I were for the seat covers. It was a tough fight what seat covers won.
Look, Daddy, new formals. Mother got them for us today. Aren't we the slick chicks, though?
Silver slippers? Oh, Mother, you're a darling.
Oh, Mother, this beautiful, wicked perfume. Oh, Mother, you're so understanding. With this on, I'll never smell like just a freshman.
Now, look here, Molly. All this buying for the girls is wonderful, and they appreciate it. But So far, I fail to see a single new thing for you.
No, I'll get around to me, Jim. Just give me time. Oh, that reminds me. I want to do something nice for the store. Really, Jim, that old sign above the door looks awfully shabby. Mm-hmm. Close up, it's not too bad. You can make out Adams Brothers Hardware. But have you ever read that sign 50 feet away?
No. I can't say I've really looked at that sign in years.
Well, the A&S in Adams are so faint you can scarcely read them. Really, Jim, from a distance, it doesn't look, well, very nice at all.
Okay, Molly. If you insist on taking the profanity out of the old sign, I'll call Will Smith tomorrow and have him make us a new and decent one. Though you're probably taking away our best piece of advertising.
Oh, Jim, I don't know whether any of you can ever know what that $500 has done for me. Spending it has been one of the most exhilarating experiences of my life. Oh, did I tell you, Jim? I've been asked to address the Women's Literary Guild and be guest of honor at their tea next month. Now, fancy that.
What did you drop, Walt? The store?
Oh, it sounds like it. Just a box of nails, but they sure make a lot of noise.
Yeah, well, it's so quiet around home when the girl's gone now. Sounds good to hear a loud, jarring noise again.
Yeah, how's Molly taking it, G? Having both of them gone at once for the first time.
Pretty fair. Here, I'll help you pick those up. I think she cried most of the first week, but she's snapping out of it now. Changed the furniture all around yesterday. That's always a good sign.
She buy those new drapes or something she was talking about?
Yes, she bought them yesterday.
She made that $500 stretch like it don't seem humanly possible these days. I never saw anybody have so much fun with a little money in my life as Molly's had.
Yeah, that's the trouble, Walt. It was a little money, but it looked like a lot of money to Molly.
Oh, you mean she's gone over 500 a little?
I mean she's gone over her 500 a lot.
Well, you'll kind of have to call a halt, won't you?
Well, I just can't do it, Walt. You know how it's been with us. You can't send two girls to college on peanuts, and Molly's done without things all their lives so they can have an education. This is the first real money she's had to spend since we've been married.
How much you figure she's spent altogether?
Well, up to yesterday. Oh, wait a minute. Adam's brother. Oh, hello, Molly. Huh? Oh, not much. Oh, that right? Well, if you like it, I'll like it. Sure, you need something nice. How much did it set you back? Yeah. Well, it sounds like it ought to be mighty fine. Sure, sounds good.
Sounds bad.
Yeah, well, that's typical of Molly. She spent her money on everyone else, not a cent for herself, and now this woman's literary something or other invited her to make a speech.
And Molly hasn't a thing to wear.
Right. Or rather, she didn't. She has now. 150 smackers worth. Which puts me right behind the eight ball. Yeah, it's going to sound pretty low down for me to call a halt to her spending just when she buys something for herself for the first time.
Well, maybe you can put it off a few days.
Oh, I'm afraid to, Walt. You spent a terrific amount already, and a couple of days more... Why, a couple of days more? And well, I just can't risk it, that's all. I'll have to drop her a hint somehow.
Well, how much you figure she's exceeded her 500?
Let me figure here a minute. I got the checks from the bank yesterday, and the total of those, plus this one for 150 she just wrote now, let's see, 8 and 5. Yeah, that's right. In the last 4 weeks, Molly has spent roughly $2,000.
We'll be back in just a moment with Act Two of the Skippy Hollywood Theater's presentation of The Check, starring Lila Rogers. But right now, let's listen to Van Desitel.
Maybe you can identify your personality from these three different types I shall describe. First, there's Type A. Type A people are always very practical and efficient. Among other things, they just can't be bothered with stirring messy floating oil into old-style peanut butter. So, of course, they prefer new, improved Skippy peanut butter, which has no oil separation. Or maybe you're type B.
Type B people are naturally economical and conservative. Consequently, they're very enthusiastic indeed about Skippy, because they know it's a food without waste. Type B people often rave about the fact that Skippy stays fresh and sweet and easily spread to the last spoonful at the bottom of the jar. Now, our third class, the Type Cs, are the dynamic, fun-loving people. They're easy to spot because they all share a mad passion for the flavor of plump, selected, freshly roasted peanuts. As a result, they can never get enough Skippy, for that's exactly what Skippy tastes like. Plump, selected, freshly roasted peanuts, that is. Obviously now, your personality may be a blend of all three. You don't have to stick to just one good reason for liking Skippy peanut butter, but I'm sure of this. If you like peanuts, you'll like Skippy.
The Skippy Hollywood Theater is presenting Lela Rogers as Molly in The Check.
There are a few more things I'm going to get with my $500, then after that I'm going to save the rest for Christmas.
The rest of it?
Yes, I need a new tablecloth and... Oh, Jim, I saw that hunting coat you were telling Walter about the other night. I'm not surprised you like it so much. I wish you'd get it, Jim, as a present for me.
But Molly...
Oh, I forgot to tell you. We had a special for Midge, and she's awfully homesick, poor baby. She has a chance to ride home over the weekend, and she'll be here Friday night.
Oh, good. A weekend at home will straighten her out. But Molly... Molly, about that $500...
Yes?
Do you have any idea how much you've spent?
Well, I guess I could figure it up if you think it's necessary.
I think it's necessary, all right.
Well, now, let's see. There was Marge's luggage and Midge's coat and...
And that 50 you gave the church.
Yes, that 50. Well, what's the matter, Jim? You sound, well, so sort of grim. You know I wouldn't have all that money without sharing some with the church.
Yeah, well, I didn't mean to sound grim about that 50. That was very commendable of you giving it to the church. I'm sure Reverend Morrison appreciated
it. Oh, he did, Jim. He seemed so pleased and oh, well surprised. Now, let's see, where was I? Oh, yes, the andirons and the drapes.
And the seat covers and the watch for each of the girls and the new dishes and my set of pipes and Aunt Ethel's hearing aid. Oh, and...
Why, Jim, you seem to know what I spent my money for better than I do myself.
Well, Molly...
Yeah.
Honey, you know I wanted you to enjoy that money.
Oh, Jim, I have. You've no idea. Really, Jim, I think having that $500 has taken 10 years off my age. I haven't had so much fun since we were just kids. I used to hear other people talk about spending money, and I just thought of them as being sort of mercenary. But believe me, Jim, they knew what they were talking about. Money is wonderful.
Mother, it's so good to be home. Honestly, I could just purr. I love college, and I'm having a terrific rush. But weep as I'd wake up in the night and think of you and Daddy and this nice old room. And oh, gosh, Mother, it's awful to be homesick. Oh,
I know, Midget, I know. But you'll be all right now. The first visit home always fixes things.
Oh, golly, I hope so. I feel better already. Mother, the new drapes are really neat. And that suit of yours is super terrific.
Did I tell you what happened when I bought that suit? What Minnie Taylor said to me when I tried it on?
No, but I bet it wasn't anything good.
Oh, but it was, in a way. When I came out of the fitting room, she said, "Oh, Molly, you don't want that suit. Why, that makes you look 40 years old." So I said, "Thanks, Minnie, I'm 45. So I took the suit.
Oh, that sounds just like her. It's a dream of a suit, and you look very young matron in it. Young matron, that is. Don't you feel all whipped creamy inside when you have on something that's really lush?
Oh, I don't know.
What's the matter? Don't you like the suit?
Oh, Midge, I've done something awful.
Mother, what do you mean? Does Daddy know?
Oh, I didn't mean what you're thinking, you little silly. I didn't mean to tell you, but I guess I'd better before you think it's worse than it is, if that's possible. It's about my $500.
Well, what about it?
I spent it, and I spent it, and do you have any idea how much money I've spent, Midgie?
Well, $500, I guess. That's what you had.
I've spent over $2,000. Over $2,000, Midge. Imagine.
Mother, does Daddy know?
Yes, Daddy knows, but he doesn't know that I know.
I don't think I get it.
Well, your Uncle Walter told me. Oh, not that he intended to, but I got to thinking about something your father said about the money the other night, and then he wouldn't discuss it anymore, so I had a talk with Walt. I never dreamed I'd overspent.
Gee, Mother, is it bad?
It's awful. Jim had to make it up at the bank by borrowing from the firm, so I've really been spending the company's money. Oh, Midgie, why am I always so impractical?
Well, I don't care if you are impractical. I like you the way you are. I know some girls with practical mothers, and heavens, the gruesome lives they lead.
Well, thanks, Midge. That's some comfort. But I can't convert compliments into cash, and cash is what I need right now.
Well, you'll just have to write something else and sell it, Mother.
Well, I've been trying to. Ever since Wednesday, that's when I talked to Walt, I've been glued to that typewriter, and I can't think of a thing. I start, and then I start over, and then I get to thinking about that awful $2,000.
Can't you finish some of those you started?
No, I've tried. I've tried to finish every one I ever started, but they were all so romantic and silly.
But gosh, you did fine with that first story, and that girl oozed romance.
But I wrote that story originally when I was 35 years old. You think differently when you're 35 than you do when you're 45.
You do? I thought people were supposed to be dangerous after they got to be 40. Isn't that good?
That's just a sort of gag, an unfunny one. Anyway, there's nothing dangerous about me unless it's with a checkbook in my hand. And then I guess I'm terrifying. Oh, Midge, what am I going to do?
Mother, didn't you ever even once stop to think when that $500 was going to run out?
No, I honestly never did. I didn't think at all. I was just living in a fool's paradise. The shopper's delight. That's what I am. Midge, don't tell Daddy that I know about it. My wild spending, will you? If it makes him happy to think I'm happy, well, let's let him think I'm happy.
Oh, Mother, don't cry. Please don't cry.
Midge, I don't care if you cut classes or if you've gone to college to find a husband or anything, but for goodness sake, learn to manage money. Don't let it manage you.
Oh, don't worry about me, Mother. I know how to take care of my money. Why, I've even got a Christmas savings account started out of my monthly allowance.
You have? Why, Midge, that's wonderful. Now, why can't I be like that?
I guess Grandmother wasn't as good a mother to you as you've been to us.
What in the world are you talking about? Well, goodness knows I haven't taught you anything about money.
Well, in a way you have. You used to tell us we had to come face to face with ourselves and find out what was wrong with us. And then change ourselves if we weren't good, so we'd be comfortable to live with ourselves. Don't you remember that?
Well, yeah, something like that. Rather different words, though.
Well, so anyway, I've done it. Faced myself, I mean. About lots of things, but especially about money.
And you mean I haven't faced myself and haven't changed what's wrong with me?
Well, Mother, you certainly aren't comfortable right now, are you? You spent too much money, and that makes you uncomfortable. And you can't write romantic stuff like you did 10 years ago, so that makes you uncomfortable. What you need to do is catch up with yourself. You see what I mean?
In a vague sort of way, I think I'm beginning to.
Well, that's that. You want to walk down to meet Daddy with me?
No, no, you run along, Midge. I think I'll just sit here, sort of face to face with myself, and see if I can find out what's wrong with me. I think I've got an idea.
Say, what's cooking? Something smells wonderful.
Oh, Jim, something is wonderful. Here, let me hang up your coat.
Oh, thanks.
Sit down a while I tell you. Guess what? 3 guesses what's so wonderful.
Well, let's see. Could be you.
No.
You look like something nice had happened. Oh, I know. The girl surprised us by coming home for the weekend.
No, but something almost as good. Jim, I sold another story.
Well, the girl... Another story? Oh, no.
Oh, now, you don't need to worry, Jim. It isn't another $500 story. Just a little $200 story. And every cent of it goes to pay you back a little bit for that awful buying spree I went on after the other story.
Well, I didn't... I didn't know you knew.
I didn't know until 3 or 4 weeks ago. But now everything's going to be all right, thanks to Midge.
Midge? What's Midge got to do with it?
Well, Midge, when she was home, pointed out to me what was wrong with my entire outlook. It took me a little while to catch on. But I found out, among other things, how silly it was for me to try to write romantic stuff at our age.
What's wrong with our age?
Well, nothing at all. It's a wonderful age, especially if you use it right. That's what I'm getting at. I wrote this little article about myself and that $500 check. And the editors of the magazine wrote me, well, here, I'll read what they said. We get far too few articles written by the Frankly 40 for the Frankly 40. We want to see more of your work.
Oh, Molly, that's wonderful. That's really wonderful.
But that's not all. They go on to say they'd like me to write a series of 12 articles. And if they like them, they want to know if I consider $200 apiece adequate pay.
And do you?
I think $200 apiece is perfect pay. If they like the articles, I'll make over $2,000. And as you know, that's just what I need.
Oh, Molly, you've arrived. The time may come, and soon, when you can set your own price for your writing. Name your own figure.
Well, I don't know, but if I ever do, I know one figure I'm going to avoid. I never, never want to see another $500 check as long as I live.
And the curtain falls on the second act of The Check, starring Lila Rogers, who returns in just a moment.
Please don't judge Skippy on the basis of your experience with other peanut butters. Skippy is a new, improved peanut butter. All the drawbacks of the old-style product are completely absent. Skippy has no oil separation, no dryness, no rancidity. Skippy stays fresh to the last spoonful. Skippy Creamy Style Blue Label is triple milled to a buttery smoothness. Chunk Style Red Label is creamy with crunchy little nuggets of peanuts added. To determine whether you'll like Skippy, you can be accurately guided by this statement. If you like peanuts, you'll like Skippy. And here's our director, Les Mitchell.
And here's our star, Lila Rogers, for a well-deserved curtain call. Lila, it was a performance worthy of the Rogers name.
Thank you, Les.
You know, I think another thank you is in order right about here. Thanks to you, Lila Rogers, not only for a fine performance, but for bringing such great talent to our theater during our series.
And I want to say that it was very thrilling to have the opportunity to bring such future stars, Barbara Lawrence and Johnny Fontaine, Frank Sundstrom, Ruth Brady, Alan Hale Jr., Audrey Long, and William Roy to the attention of our audiences.
Well, I'm very sure that they'll all go a long way along the Stardust Trail, Lila. You know, they turned in wonderful performances, and especially great was the performance of your greatest discovery, a young lady who has already traveled that trail, Miss Ginger Rogers.
I was proud of my child, Les, and I know she'll be proud to hear you say that. Now, I'd like to make a final prediction before I take leave of our audience's hostess. There's a young man on next week's show.
Lila.
Quiet, Les, I'm predicting. You're going to hear great things from this fine actor.
But, Lila.
I predict a great performance.
Lila, please. Our star next week is Loreen Tuttle.
And her co-star is none other than Les Mitchell. Seriously, Les, I've seen some of the many letters requesting your appearance as star on this program. Next week, the wishes of the audience will be granted, and I know they'll love every minute of it.
Well, thank you very much, Lila. And before you go, I want to make, I want to extract just one promise from you. Last week, we had a vote of thanks from Ginger Rogers for prying you out of your shell. Now we all want to make certain that you're going to stay out of it.
I promise, Les. Now that I'm back in all the excitement again, I want to stay there. Before I say goodbye, I'd like to thank Barbara Fuller and Willard Waterman and the rest of the cast for a fine performance. And now, Les, goodbye.
Goodbye, Lila. God bless you and thank you.
In the cast, you heard our star, Lila Rogers, as Molly, Barbara Fuller as Midge, Sandra Gare as Margie, Bill Waterman as Jim, and Victor Rodman as Walter. The Check was written by Helen Sloan Sorrells, produced and directed by Les Mitchell, who is here also as your host.
Thank you for being our guests, and we hope you'll be with us again next week.
Musical score was composed and conducted by Del Castillo. Be sure to listen each week and hear such stars as Les Mitchell, co-starring with Loreen Tuttle, Buddy Rogers, George Koulouris, Virginia Bruce, and many other great actors in great stories selected especially for them.
It's the Upstate Radio Theater. This is show 1617. I'm Jake Longwell. We'll wrap up the hour with two 15-minute broadcasts. First, Ripley's Believe It or Not, from December 9th, 1947, and Robert Ripley's story about the Louisiana swamps. Then from March 27th, 1957, an episode of The Howard Miller Show, with music and conversation with singer Eileen Rogers.
Believe it or not.
Yes, believe it or not. Fascinating pages from the amazing radio sketchbook of that famous finder of flawless, fantastic, flabbergasting features, Bob Ripley. And here speaking for Bob is Gregory Abbott.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the Believe It or Not Radio Auditorium, where each day we present unbelievable oddities from the famous drawing board of Bob Ripley. And now we open Bob's radio sketchbook to our Believe It or Not quiz question.
And what's the brain twister for our listeners this time?
Well, today, Bill Griffiths, Bob asks his listeners to tangle intellects with this one. What war was fought in India because of Greece?
Oh, now, wait a minute. Did you say, what war was fought in India because of Greece?
That's the question, and we'll give our listeners Bob Ripley's answer at the close of today's Believe It or Not program. And here's a hint that may help. The Greece we're talking about is not a country.
Oh, well, I'm afraid that doesn't help me much.
Well, keep trying.
Okay. But suppose now you tell us what Bob Ripley has on his fabulous drawing board.
Today's Believe It or Not drama proves that blood is thicker than water, especially muddy water. And you'll see why when we present Bob's sketch in exactly 60 seconds. First, though, here's a man with a message.
While we here in America prepare to celebrate a sumptuous Christmas, the people of Western Europe face the grimmest winter yet since the end of the war. As one of the few countries in the world with enough food to feed its citizens, the United States is being looked to by Europe's men, women, and children for help in their hour of need. For our part, we are seeking to supply Europe's minimum needs by shipping overseas as rapidly as possible 570 million bushels of wheat. This, despite the fact that our own wheat crop has been off by 900 million bushels from the previous year's record. That is why you and I are being asked to cooperate with the Citizens Food Committee in the observance of Meatless Tuesday and Eggless Thursday. That is why we are asked to go easy on bread, baked goods, and the expensive cuts of meat, because it will help us to conserve badly needed grain. By saving wheat, by saving meat now, we will help save the peace in Europe and the rest of the world for the years to come. And now back to Bob Ripley's Believe It or Not Radio Auditorium.
For today's Believe It or Not drama, we must first go back to a small town in Texas in the year 1909. We walk along a little side street, edged with small, neat homes, each with its trim front lawn, its flagstone walk. Everything here seems a picture of peace and contentment. But in the front parlor of one of these houses, there is worry and heartbreak as two brothers, John and Albert Young, speak quietly together.
I tell you, Al, a thing like this makes a man feel pretty awful. I've failed at everything I've ever done. First the store in Baton Rouge, now the crops and the farm.
Maybe you ought to get out of Louisiana, John. Move here to Texas.
No, there's nothing wrong with Louisiana. I'm just a near all-round failure. Any man that brings a child into the world and then can't support it, his own son...
How's Mayfield today?
How'd you expect her to feel? She'd have been better off if she'd never married me.
She doesn't think that way.
After everything else, not even to be able to be a mother to her own child.
Helen and I will treat him just like our own. You know that, John.
Sure, Al. I know. Guy's lucky to have a brother like you. And listen, I want you to do just that. Treat him as if he were your own.
I just said...
No, I mean, let him think so, too. He was born in this house. He'll grow up in it. I don't want you to ever let on that you're not his real parents.
You think his mother like that?
I think May wants it that way, too. What's the use of the boys knowing his own father couldn't even earn enough to feed him?
No, don't start on that again, John.
All right. Well, we'll be getting out of your way soon.
Stay as long as you want.
That's nice of you, Al, but I know you're crowded here. Baby's a month old now. In another week, May and I'll go back to Louisiana and... try to start over. It'll be just as if we never had a son.
And so John Young returned to Louisiana after leaving his baby with his brother. 10 long years passed, during which time John and his wife lost contact with his brother and their child. We find them now in their home on the banks of the Tensas River in Louisiana swamp country. John is just sitting down to the evening meal after returning from a long journey.
You couldn't find any trace of them, John?
No, nothing, May. I talked to the neighbors, the postmaster.
How about the minister?
Yes, him too. They all say the same thing. Helen and Al moved away from the town 3 years ago. Nobody knows where they've gone.
We should have gone to live in Texas. We never should have come back here.
No, May, it's all my fault. If I hadn't had that fight with Al 5 years ago, We wouldn't have lost touch with them. They'd let us know where they were going when they moved.
Isn't there some way we can find them?
We've never stopped trying ever since this farm started to pay. I don't know what else we can do.
Oh, I suppose we can't blame them. After all this time, they'd have no way of knowing we'd want our son again. Our son.
Now, me.
I'm sorry, John. But it just seems like God shouldn't have done this to us. Think of it. We'll never know our child. We'll never know what he looks like, even.
May, I've got an idea. I've got enough money to buy a bigger farm someplace out of this swamp country where it's not so lonely. Wouldn't you like that?
No, John. I think I'll just stay here.
But why?
I don't know. Seems like it just wouldn't be any use. Be different if we had our little boy.
But it's you I'm thinking of.
I've been here this long. No sense moving now. I'd have liked to have made a nice home for the child. But it just don't seem to matter anymore. It just don't seem to matter.
And so that lonely couple, John and May Young, continued to live on their little farm on the Tensas River. They had no neighbors and few friends, for no one ever came into that desolate and dangerous swampland except now and then a few fishermen working their way up through the shallows close to the riverbank. Like the two young men who were there towards evening on a day in 1937.
How you doing, Frank? I've got my basket nearly full.
I'm not as lucky as you are, Hubert. I can't seem to get a bite.
Well, after all, I'm the visitor. I guess these Louisiana fish think they have to be nice to me.
Well, whatever it is, that's some catch you've got.
My birthday present from the Tensas River.
Hey, this your birthday?
Yeah. Oh, darn mosquitoes. Say, this is pretty wild country we've gotten ourselves into.
You bet it is. And don't get back more than 10 feet off the riverbank either.
Why?
Well, this is solid ground. Back in there's all swampland. You'd sink like a stone.
No kidding.
Come on, let's go on up that next inlet, huh? And maybe I'll have better luck.
Oh, you go ahead. I'm doing all right here.
Okay, Hubert. See you in a couple of minutes.
Right. Say, wonder what that is back there through those trees. Looks like a pool. Maybe fish in it.
Hey, Frank! Frank!
Can't hear me. Oh, well, go and have a look for myself. Before I'm through, I'll catch all the fish in Louisiana.
Hello! Hello! Frank! Frank, where are you?
It's so dark. I can't see anything.
Frank!
I'm lost.
Help! Help me!
Mud. I can hardly walk. I can't see. I can't walk any farther. The mud. I'm sinking. Help! Help! Help!
Well, about ready to turn in, May?
I think I'll sit up a while longer, John.
Well, guess I'll get some sleep.
John, listen.
What is it?
I thought I heard something. A cry.
Oh, maybe a bird.
That's no bird. It's coming from the swamp. We'd better go and have a look.
Yes, you're right, May. There's somebody out there. It's coming from over this way, May. Keep on the path now. Don't slip.
I'm all right.
There he is. It's a young man.
Oh, he's halfway down in the mud. Oh, be careful, yeah, John.
Hang on to my hand. There's a rock I put my foot on. Pull him up.
Mother. Anna, laying down on the path. Oh, poor fella, he fainted.
Look at those mosquito bites. This is going to be swamp fever if I know anything. Come on, May, we've got to get this fella up to the house.
Poor boy, he's still asleep. 7 days since we picked him up in that swamp.
Yes, his fever ought to be breaking soon.
I wonder who he is.
So do I. His friends, his family. Well, it must be word of death.
Yes. His family. You know, John, he must be just about the age our boy would be.
What?
Look, he's opening his eyes.
What happened?
Oh, take it easy, boy. How do you feel?
Not so good.
Well, you've been very sick. We found you out in the swamp.
Swamp? Oh, yeah. Frank warned me. That mud's like glue. Thanks for saving my life.
Well, no need to thank us, my boy.
Frankie, is he your brother?
No, just a friend. I was visiting.
I only asked because we knew somebody must be worrying about you.
Yes, we couldn't let anybody know your family.
Oh, my family won't be worried. They won't know. They're back in Texas.
You come from Texas?
Yeah, I was born there. I'll sure be glad to get back. Wait till Dad hears what I got myself into. And on my birthday, too.
Your birthday?
Sure, the day I got lost. That was my birthday.
John!
My boy, what is your father's name?
Al Young. I'm Hubert Young.
John! John! Did you hear what he said?
I heard, May. The miracle has happened. This is our son.
Yes, that boy, Hubert Young, who had been brought up knowing nothing of his real parents, actually was restored to them when they saved him from death in the Louisiana swamp just outside their home. Believe it or not.
In exactly 60 seconds, we'll be back with Bob Ripley's answer to today's Believe It or Not quiz question. Meanwhile, here's an important Believe It or Not that concerns you.
This past Sunday marked the anniversary of a terrible lesson we Americans had to learn about the importance of vigilance in the protection of our country and its heritage of liberty. For it was the anniversary of the Japanese attack on Pearl Harbor. But vigilance is not simply a matter of military preparedness. Today, there are those inside and outside of our country who challenge seriously the democratic idea, with its emphasis on the individual citizen. Our answer to this challenge should be to make democracy work better than ever in this nation of ours by practicing it in our daily conduct, by keeping better informed on the affairs of the day, by taking an ever more active part in the political life of our community, state, and country as a whole. Only in this way does our precious American heritage become truly vital in terms of the problems of today. As good citizens and good Americans, we should remember always that in a democracy, freedom is everybody's job. And now for the answer to today's Believe It or Not quiz question.
Now let's see how many of Bob Ripley's listeners were able to guess the answer to the question, what war was fought in India because of Greece?
Well, that hint you gave us at the beginning of the program didn't help much. We know the Greece you're talking about is not the country Greece.
No.
But I can't imagine a war being fought over lubricating Greece.
Well, one was fought, believe it or not. The war was the famous Indian Mutiny of 1857.
Well, where does the Greece come in?
Well, the war was fought because the native Indian regiments discovered that the ammunition which the British supplied them was greased with cow fat to prevent it from rusting.
Yes.
And since the cow is India's most sacred animal, the natives were enraged enough to rise in a long and terrible rebellion. Yes, sir, a war was fought in India over Greece, believe it or not.
And that takes us down to curtain time. What's Bob Ripley's famous farewell today?
When Bob Ripley visited the bayou country of Louisiana, where today's dramatic sketch took place, he was invited to a dinner of delicious shrimp and rice in the home of a wealthy Creole built on stilts high over the marshes. That night, his host saluted Bob with a toast spoken in French. Bob makes that toast his wish to his listeners today. Here's its translation. May your fate be as bright as a mirror. May your lucky star glisten like the purest water. And may you live on golden stilts forever.
Believe it or not.
Tune in again tomorrow at this same time, ladies and gentlemen, when we'll be back with more pages from the radio sketchbook of Bob Ripley, including the amazing sketch of The Chicken That Was Worth $10 Million. The Believe It or Not show was dramatized for radio by George Lefferts and Clarice Ross. Dramatized oddities from the famous drawing board of Bob Ripley are heard over most of these stations every day.
This is NBC, the National Broadcasting Company.
Wrigley's Spearmint Gum presents The Howard Miller Show. Now, here with music on records is Howard Miller.
Thank you very much, Joe. As always, of course, it's a real delightful pleasure for us to spend the next quarter hour with you along the CBS line of great radio stations from coast to coast. And today, a very talented young lady who has had the opportunity of being in Chicago for the last few days on one of the big network programs, a radio show known as The Breakfast Club, and who is here today as our guest on our Wrigley Show. Miss Eileen Rogers, who we've been privileged to have once or twice before on this program, and it's always a delight because here indeed is a not only swell talent to interview, but a swell friend and a great little gal. Eileen Rogers from Pittsburgh, PA. All brought to you by Wrigley Spearmint Chewing Gum. And after this opening record by Eileen, one side of her big new hit for Columbia, we'll talk to Eileen and you'll hear from the horse's mouth, so to speak, but it's a pretty little filly that'll be speaking, all about the music world as she views it from her vantage point in the former Smoky City. Let's listen first off to Eileen Rogers with This Day.
Day the right to say I'm once again in your heart. Show me the way right back to your arms, never again to part. Again in your heart, bring back your love I need so much, darling, we can't stay apart. Give me this day the right.
Beautiful ballad, isn't it? Done by Eileen Rogers, a Columbia record known as This Day. You know, a lot of people have expressed themselves in a lot of ways when they talk about the great heart of America. But sometimes I think the real heart, the pulsating beat of this nation, lies in its retail merchants, the stores which string across our never-ending nation in a never-ending line of real community service. Now, it's these retail merchants, the big stores, the little stores, the in-between stores, that constantly are performing a great public service to you, staying open so that you can buy the products and the quality products that you want for your family. And I every so often like to give a real salute and a low bow of humility to the businessmen and women all across these 48 states and up in Canada and Honolulu and around the world who make the real pulse of America, the retail stores who perform the great service of being available for you. Now, one of the products that these fine merchants always carry is Wrigley Spearmint, and I hope you'll take advantage of the enjoyment that you can get from always chewing a delightfully good and pure and wholesome product. Why don't you try Wrigley Spearmint? If you haven't yet, I know that you'll enjoy it. It's a real treat always. For young and old, Wrigley Spearmint chewing gum. You'll always like it. It's good. Well, let's talk to Eileen Rogers. And you notice I said, since the smoke abatement law was passed, Pittsburgh is no longer the smoky city. How does it feel, though, to see the light of day, Eileen?
It feels great. It's grown up quite a bit, Howard.
I know. It's a great town. The Golden Triangle, where they always have the floods, isn't that where they usually
have? That's right. That's the city of the three rivers.
What, the Cucamonga and the Mazuza?
And Anaheim.
And the Anaheim. Yes. I thought so. You know, it's just swell having you here, Eileen. I think on two other occasions that you were on our show, once you were in a remote spot...
Twice I was in a remote spot.
Oh, is this the first time we've sat across
the
mic? No,
this is the second time.
So you've been on the show four times. This is too much. Goodbye.
I love it, though.
But every time you come around these parts, you always come bringing another swell effort on the Columbia label. And I remember about a year ago when you first started your recording career, how despondent a young lady you were because a hit hadn't occurred to you yet. And gee, things just don't happen that fast, do they?
No, I would remember when you were talking about it. When last time when Mitch was in town, that I was here, too.
Yes, we were eating at...
Having coffee somewhere, and Mitch asked me what was wrong, and I said I felt badly because we hadn't had a hit.
Uh-huh. And he said, don't worry.
That's right.
Sure. And then we all went out and ate, and we came back, and you felt better, he felt better, and everybody felt better. Well, that's the way it goes, swinging these days. But anyway, Eileen, since then, of course, you have had one tremendous hit. For yourself, The Miracle of Love, which got on the charts, which is symbolic, I suppose, of having a hit.
Well, it took a long time for that, Howard. It took 6 months.
That was a slow starter, wasn't it?
Certainly was.
How do you account, you as a performer in the record business and dealing with Mitch as you do, how do you account for a record coming out and nothing happening to it for, say, 6 or 8 months?
Well, I asked Mitch that the last time when Columbia had their party in New York, and he told me that at the time Miracle was released, there was so much rock and roll out that I tried to work my way through, and was knocked down.
Uh-huh.
And then I tried again and was knocked down, and the third time, it was slowly, rock and roll had slowly hit its happy medium.
Yes.
And that they accepted me when I tried again.
Well, wouldn't you call that almost a rock and roll song? Certainly it had a rock and roll beat. Its significance maybe was deeper than Scooby-Dooby type of lyric, but...
Well, the beat, yes. I guess the beat is like a rock and roll. They call that a fish beat.
Fish?
Yeah.
Where does that come from?
You can buy it for a fin or something. Something like that.
Smoke clams, bearded, or otherwise. Well, anyway, The Miracle of Love then turned out to be a tremendous hit for you, and off the heels of that comes this, which is also the side we're going to play, the wall side, which is apparently your favorite side, has also been a substantial seller. This was a real hype song, wasn't it? This is one that everyone was enthused about.
Yes, it was. Of course, we covered a young boy who did a tremendous job with it on
Brooke
Epic.
Benton,
yes. And then a young unknown covered me, Patty Page.
Patty Page, yes.
Yes.
And, she's a newcomer.
Yes, very, very talented girl, though.
She sure is.
I'm very flattered to even be in competition with her. But Mercury released hers. Patty and I, in fact, there wasn't a cover on it, really.
No.
Patty and I recorded it the same night.
Uh-huh.
But in 48 hours, mine was out.
Well, these things frequently happen where all the A&R men and all the people of music will get very enthused about a song that someone has done, and they'll all say, oh, this is a tremendous hit, and they'll all rush to cover it. And nothing happened. It dies a boring. There's no way of telling ahead of time that something's going to be a hit.
It's just like those spotlight reviews you get in Billboard. After you have a medium-sized hit, you automatically get a spotlight.
Yes.
I got it on Give Me,
mm-hmm.
and I got it on The Wall. Patty and I both got the first two spotlights.
In other words, what
and
they're doing
mean
is
anything.
They're making a bet on the favorites. That's what
right.
it is. And when you establish yourself, it's important. And yet I wonder how important it is, Eileen, because you look at the charts today, and for the unindoctrinated, charts are a word that we use in the record business, indicating those records which make a particular listing in a particular newspaper of show business, and those are the so-called hits. No, I made such a long speech about that, I forgot
what I was just going to say. What'd you say?
Oh, I don't know. I don't know. I guess I was going to say... Oh, yes, I know what I was going to say. You say that it's important that you come off of a hit to have another one. And yet I wonder if it is, because on the charts today are all newcomers, practically. People who maybe make one record, it's a big hit, and maybe never make another one. So I don't know how important it is to have two or three hits in a row.
Well, I'll tell you something. The young boys in this business are knocking the girls out of it.
Sure. And you know why, I think, Eileen? It's the same as in our conversation last evening when we had this dinner party for all these people. I think that today... The only way that girls can make a dent in the industry is by cutting country and western songs. And I think that you're all very foolish, and I don't mean to set myself up as the judge and jury, but I think you're all very foolish to do rock and roll, because not only doesn't it lend itself to the girl's voice, But girls buy records, and girls don't buy girls.
Oh?
Generally. But you know that, so I don't have to tell you that. But the point being that it would seem to me that if you did a real country and western thing, it would just be delightful. Your mama's listening, isn't she?
Oh, yes, she's never missed a show.
Isn't that
and
wonderful?
She's up bright and early at 7 in the morning, too, to hear my other one.
She right there in Pittsburgh?
Uh-huh. And I bet my dad's there, too.
And I suppose she'll call you right after the show and say, what did he mean?
She always does.
She always does, huh? Well, anyway, we don't expect mamas to know everything there is about records. But I don't know, they're beginning to dig at the most. They are subjected to records all the time with their teenage youngsters. And so most mothers and fathers today apprise themselves of most of the information about the business.
To make a long story short, one of the Esquires that I worked with last week in Chubby's, his grandmother heard Miracle of Love for the first time, and she turned around and said to him, who's that guy?
That's a wonderful story. Who's that guy? Well, here's this guy by the name of Eileen Rogers now, singing her newest Columbia hit, A Thing Called The Wall.
Bum, bum, bum. There's a wall between us, and it's not made of stone. Although we're together, I feel so alone. Though you say love me, there's no warmth in your kiss. Speak your mind, my darling. We can't go on like this. Is it something us apart? Darling, tear down that wall and mend my broken heart. And mend my broken heart.
That's The Wall with Eileen Rogers. You know, it's days like this, little Eileen, that I sort of wish Mr. Wrigley had purchased 2 hours of time, because it's always fun to talk to you on the CBS network, and thank you so very much for being here.
It was my pleasure, Howard.
Will you say hello to the mama in Pittsburgh?
Say hello to her. She's listening.
What's her name?
Mary.
Mary?
Yeah.
I'll call her Mama Mary.
Okay.
Mama Mary, I hope you enjoyed listening to your daughter. That's what I'd say if direct communications were allowed. Eileen, the best of luck. Thanks very much, and God bless you on your tour. I hope it's a real success.
Thank you very much.
Thanks a lot. Eileen Rogers from the Columbia Record Company, and from Chicago for Wrigley Spearmint Chewing Gum. You try this product. It just swell. And thanks again to all the retailers who handle a swell product and bring additional service to the people of America. This is Howard Miller. We'll see you tomorrow. Here's the star of our show, Joe Foss.
Join Howard tomorrow when his guest will be Jerry Wald on the CBS Radio Network.
That does it for this hour of Old Time Radio. I'm Jake Longwell. Thank you for your company. The Upstate Radio Theater is distributed by Quality Radio Productions.